rebounds by Smith. And no rebounds, if that's the case, we put Oakley and Mace in your face. We draw charges and we send picks. We are New York. We are the New York Knicks. Say, go New York, go New York, go. Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of West Coast Knicks Fan. I am your host, Matt Ritter. Jeff Cerulli couldn't be here because he's celebrating Christmas with his girlfriend, and I don't celebrate Christmas because I am Jewish. But I will be eating Chinese food, so don't worry, and I will be probably going to see Django. So it was a crazy week for the Knicks this week. We ended up going 2-1. I predicted that we were probably going to lose two games. I'm not counting the Houston game because we already did that on last week's podcast. I am joined this week by a very special guest. We all know that you need to have a gambling cousin for you to have a successful podcast. So this week I'm joined by my cousin Mike, who is a gambling basketball guru. Welcome to the podcast, Mikey.
Well, thank you. It's an honor to be here, man.
So Mike is actually an East Coaster, too. He grew up on Long Island with me, and he lives out here now. Now, you are officially a Suns fan. Is that right?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if we have enough time to even go into who I actually like nowadays, because it's such a confusing situation with the Nash moving over to the Lakers and all that stuff. But I guess technically I'm a Laker fan now.
Ugh, that's disgraceful.
But it's really not true. I guess it's just, yeah.
But you also took me to a few Clipper games throughout the past couple of years, so you're not you don't identify with the Clips.
I do. You know, that's probably like the most consistent team that I've supported throughout my years of rooting. So I am a Clipper fan, although even that's a little bit, you know, sort of hard for me to say at this point because they're doing so well.
Yeah, I mean, I like the Clips mostly because they've got two of my favorite ex-Knicks, even though Chauncey was only there for a little while between him and Jamal Crawford. I got to support my ex-Knicks that are doing well. Now, this week was a very challenging week for the Knicks. I mean, I think we're starting to really see them for who they are. I mean, they're not the perfect super team that we thought we had at the beginning of the year. We're starting to struggle against defensive teams that can lock down, like Chicago, for example. The other night, they really locked us down. We got frustrated. We got a bunch of techs. You could blame it on the refs all you want, but the bottom line is Chicago played good D and they rotated well, and we weren't getting open threes, and we really struggled. So,
yeah, you know, that game was interesting because Chicago, I believe, was coming off of a pretty lackluster performance the game before. I forgot who they played, but they got beat pretty bad. And I believe it was the night before that game. And so they were, I guess they came out with a whole new attitude and a chip on their shoulder.
They're a good team. I mean, I think that's the other thing. I mean, I think Chicago's a good team. They have good principles. They've got a great coach. Like, people are like, oh, they stink without Rose. They're 15-11.
They're fantastic.
I mean,
yeah.
Think about that.
They're really under the radar. And I think that maybe Joakim Noah is the most underrated player possibly in the NBA.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that. I hate to denigrate Tyson Chandler because I love him, but he got dominated by Noah in every respect. If you look at the stat lines or if you just watch the game, it was just a younger, quicker, harder working. And I think, you know, look, Chandler ended up getting frustrated. Didn't look like Noah did anything to warrant Chandler sort of flipping out on him. And I think, you know, that was just a product of when somebody's beating you at your own game kind of thing.
Yeah, you know, well, that's a good point. But, you know, I wouldn't, as a Knicks fan, you know, you're almost programmed to panic about that. But I think, you know, if you look at that game just in and of itself, you know, it's almost a good thing for the Knicks to go through that adversity. And then, you know, every team is entitled to have a couple of bad games in the regular season, if not a few more. And the Knicks were really, really excelling at home. And it was like, you know, that game was due, I think. And what impressed me the most as just sort of like an impartial observer was that the end of the night, the Knicks only lost by 6.
Yeah.
I could not believe that that was the final score.
You know, this is one thing that I've been pointing to as a sign of like, oh, the Knicks are for real. One thing that great teams do is they don't give away any games. Like, even if they're down 20, they still try to fight till the end. And the Knicks have not had a game this year where they were just like, oh, it's over. Even against Houston, where they got annihilated both times, they were still playing really hard well into the fourth quarter, right? It's a good sign. It's definitely a good sign.
Absolutely. And I think, it's okay that perhaps the Knicks were a little bit complacent that night, thinking that the Bulls, they probably had that same attitude. All right, well, it's the Bulls on the road without Derrick Rose, coming off a back-to-back, coming into our Madison Square Garden where we never lose and we never will again. And, you know, when they stepped it up, maybe they did were playing out of some frustration. And I don't know if that's going to be a trend. I don't think that Noah will cause too many long-term problems to Tyson Chandler, although that does remain to be seen. I mean, that could be a playoff issue.
Yeah, I'm worried about a team like the Bulls. I really am, because we rely heavily on our ball movement and getting open shots and, you know, Melo creating or the pick and roll creating opportunities. But a team like the Bulls and a team like Miami last year in the playoffs were so disciplined on their rotations, it was like watching two different games. When you watch them against the scrub teams, they just flip the ball around the three-point line and eventually somebody's always open. But against the Bulls, it was like they never had one clean look the entire time. And then I'm like, well, then, you know, where do we create outside of Melo? Like, Felton clearly is a good pick-and-roll player, but anytime he tries to, like, sort of bite off more than he can chew, he's kind of a little sloppy as a one-on-one kind of guy.
Right, yeah, there's definitely that. And, you know, the Knicks actually maybe in a sense it might hurt them in the end is how well they were shooting the three ball in the first couple of weeks. Because, like, you know, that type of team, I mean, you know, the law of averages is such that you're not going to keep up that pace of shooting as impressive as it was and great to watch, you know, even for me who doesn't consider himself a Knicks fan, but, you know, I'm all signed on. I love watching Melo, this new Melo playing defense and offense, and the team just playing together as a unit that is absolutely intimidating. They're probably the most intimidating home team. Maybe apart from the Grizzlies are about as on the same level as the Grizzlies or the Spurs in the NBA right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think you brought up a couple of interesting points. I think it's so exciting to watch a team that bombs from three-point land,
mm-hmm.
but that's not sustainable. And right. And the numbers are coming down, and I've talked to a couple of other people on prior podcasts, and they, you know, a couple of the New York beat writers suggested that when the numbers come down, Woodson will adjust. Problem is, I don't know what he adjusts to. I mean, Novak is just a three-point specialist. J.R. Smith is a great three-point shooter, but he is starting to adjust, which is nice to see J.R. Smith not just, like, standing at the three-point line. Ronnie Brewer is just not a good shooter, period, and he probably should be getting less and less playing time when Shumpert hopefully comes back soon enough. But the other thing I think is nice to see, we're now almost 30 games into the season, and I think it's clear this new Melo is here to stay, I think. What do you think?
I do, too. I think it's the real deal. And you know what? It's one of those things where it's like, you know, I've always liked Melo, and I've always, you know, I guess I've, you know, sort of gone with the, you know, with the rest of fans, and I've always sort of assumed that he might be a little bit one-dimensional, and he's more of a shooter, and he doesn't necessarily play team ball. And now, I honestly think that something, this is my own, you know, my own sort of read on the situation. I believe something has inspired him to step it up on that level. Something has motivated him, and I don't know if we'll ever find out what it is. And I don't know if I have a feeling it may have been Hurricane Sandy bringing people together to some degree, because it really put him in that mode. It put him in on another level in terms of what he was setting out to do. And I think the momentum is carrying him into thinking he can do something better than we thought possible, maybe even he thought possible.
I think that's an interesting point. So you're suggesting that it's an external, non-basketball motivation. Something's going on personally, or
I think it's probably external. I don't even know that it's non-basketball, though. It could be a basketball challenge of some sort.
Yeah, because, you know, there is that theory, basketball theory, that, hey, all of his classmates from the draft have now all gotten their championship. You
right.
know, Wade, Bosh, and LeBron, who he considers himself to be the equal to, if not better than. I mean, he obviously doesn't think he's better than LeBron, because you just can't. But he thinks he's his equal. I love that ego and confidence, because you can't win a championship if your main player doesn't think he's the best player in the league.
Right. I mean, now, I don't know, you know, this is a half-baked theory, too, but there is a possibility that just not having Amare in the lineup might be changing his attitude, because if, you know, Amare definitely has a reputation for sort of showing up when it's convenient to try to be as nice as possible, knowing that you know my real feelings about Mr.
Yeah, Stone. Oh, yeah, no. Cousin Mike thinks Amare is the number one cancer in the league. We once went through the list of top five cancers in the league. And by cancer, we mean, you know, just clubhouse nightmare, just all stats, no wins,
right.
Brings down the level of talent around him, doesn't utilize other talented players around him to the best of their abilities, and then blames other people. Those are sort of the factors for biggest cancer. And I believe he was in the top five, if not at the top of Mike's rankings for 5 or 7 years running.
And there's another important quality, which is the most insidious aspect of it, and that is that the quote unquote cancer of our Fade Five cancer list had to be guys who are generally lauded by fans in the league alike as perennial all stars and or, you know,
tell us who
players.
Else made your consistent cancer all cancer team.
Well, at the time what it was when Amari was on the Sun, so he was up there. We had a Clipper, Baron Davis.
Oh yeah, well Baron Davis was definitely one of the all time cancers.
And this is
sure.
Before he became a sort of, you know, the Baron Davis that everyone, you know, kind of was, you know, before his real, you know, overt slide down the
right. Yeah, Mike was ahead of the game on the Baron Davis cancer.
We definitely jumped that train. Now, to be fair, there was definitely a guy that I really wish I could take off that list.
Zach Randolph.
No, he was never on the list. Okay. It was David West, and David West was on the Hornets. He made that list, and you know, I think he's really changed.
Yeah, hey, the Pacers are winning without, without Granger, so I guess he's got to get some of that credit.
Yeah, I mean, he's really, you know, turned himself.
I haven't been
into
following
quite
the Pacers
difference.
This year. We'll get to the league in a minute, but and who else was there? Anyone else on that?
Well, at the time it was Tracy McGrady. He was he was still alive then.
So let me ask you this. Was Melo ever on your cancer list?
No. You know, it's funny because I have a lot of people who like to talk to me. And I sort of have a reputation of being like a Nick. I don't want to say I'm a Nick. I'm definitely never have been a Nick hater. But to be fair and to be honest about it on your Knicks podcast, because why not? It's Christmas and we're Jewish.
Yep.
I've always sort of chuckled at the Knicks and their decision making.
Well, it's been piss poor up until this year.
Right. And it all came together almost magically. But what's interesting is that so people sort of have taken it as my reputation of being like someone who dislikes the Knicks. Okay. And that's just not true. I just used to sort of laugh. I laughed when they signed Stoudemire. You know, I laughed even when they signed Melo because I just did not see him getting them over that hump at that point. Now, but I've always liked Melo, and I've always liked him in a category of his own. Like, he's not the type of player that I normally would like, but I like him anyway. Yeah, I love the way he always looks like exactly what you said. He has that confidence that comes from another level of his brain that I've never even been able to muster on my best day. He, you know, he always looks like he's having fun. He plays hard. And, you know, and I always liked the guy. I always liked him as a personality. I always just, you know, I always had a soft spot for him. So I'm happy as heck to see him performing the way he is.
Well, you know, what's funny. You mentioned him being happy and playing hard is that he stopped being happy last year, and that sort of took away from his game. You know, like, Melo's having fun again out on the court, and your best scorer needs to be enjoying the game. And I think the Lynn thing, look, Melo's got an ego. He needs to be the best player on his team, and it wasn't going to work if Lynn was getting all the accolades, for better or for worse. It just wasn't meshing. And Amari seemingly is not. It's funny about Amari. I make jokes with my co-host Jeff that Amari is not an alpha male. Like, the second Melo came there, he bit Amari once, and then Amari, you know, started carrying his lunch for him the rest of the time. You know, I mean, that's how I feel about their relationship. I think, you know, Amari would, you know, go around and get the car from the valet, you know, no matter what the situation, he's always sitting bitch. You know, Melo always has shotgun. That's their dynamic. That's my theory. I don't know if it's true or not, but I just can tell by when they're on the court and Melo has the ball, Amari doesn't even put his hand up. You know what I mean?
I like that you qualify that because, you know, that's something you hear a lot where the people say is we can only go by what we see or, you know, what, you know, and sometimes, the personality or the characteristics that you think you have a read on a person on the court don't necessarily translate. You know, I'll never understand where Amari's coming from. But I do know this about him. He's not in a position where he has any sort of concern whatsoever about winning anything. And putting forth the effort to do so. And now, you know, am I judging him from outside of the box as somebody who's been thrown $90 million to, you know, be given the decision to play or not? No, I've never had that chance. But
Well, I think it's funny you say that. I think a lot of Knicks fans would disagree with you, but we might be a little biased because up until this year, you know, Stoudemire was not seen as an unselfish player. And now he's injured, and all of a sudden everybody's making the case of, oh, well, he'll just do whatever's good for the team. He'll come off the bench. He's always just been a team first guy. And I'm like, where's the evidence to back that up? I'm not really sure we have the evidence to suggest that Stoudemire isn't ego-driven and doesn't just want to get his. You know, I think the only reason he sort of stepped to the side when Melo got there was because Melo imposed his will and decided that it was his team. It wasn't like, you know, Stoudemire was averaging 30. I just think they got in each other's way. It remains to be seen how they play well together on the court, because everybody has this theory that Stoudemire is going to come off the bench, which will be great. He's a pick-and-pop guy. Their bench is really struggling. They don't have anybody on the inside and get any buckets. He can't do anything but help their bench because their bench is really strong.
I agree with that. I mean, even as much as
he can only help their bench.
I would put him
The problem is that the bench is only 16 minutes a game.
Right.
You got to give him 25 for him to be happy, no matter what. Even though he says he's going to come off the bench, you can't give him less than 25 minutes and expect that he's going to be like, oh, everything's cool. So there's going to be at least two significant stretches, and probably at the end of the game, which is the big, you know, elephant in the room that nobody's talking about, like, Melo and Amari are going to have to coexist at the end of the game. How do you see that playing out?
You know, this is one of the fascinating points in the season where we're going to wind up seeing that very shortly, as well as, you know, what we've already got a little bit of a taste of the other night with Nash and Kobe working together. To me, that's one of the most fascinating things to see. Two superstars work out a dynamic right in the middle of the season where they figure out exactly, like you call it, the alpha male in the situation of who's going to get the final shot. Now, you know, I've always thought that was slightly overrated. I feel like if you have a guy you're going to all the time, you wind up with a situation like with a Kobe where you got an obvious double team drawing you into a corner. And, you know, you got to be one of those real physical shooters who can get it up there.
Unfortunately, Amare and Melo take up the same physical space.
Exactly, yeah.
So I don't know the answer there. I don't know that anyone has an answer. Mm-hmm. I think that's why analysts, from the get-go, all this top NBA analysts, it doesn't work. They both like the elbow. Where does one go?
Well, my answer to that would be, I think that it's just not as simple as that. And I think a lot of sports media likes to have that debate because it really does. It really is a black and white sort of thing. Like, who gets the ball? It's, you know, essentially translates to who's the best player, who's your favorite player to, you know, perform under stress. But to me, especially with the coach, like, Woodson is fantastic. I mean,
yeah, by the way, let's give that guy all the credit in the world, most underrated coach in the league.
Absolutely.
I mean, his record is now 18-6 last year, 20-7 this year. That's 38-13. I mean, that's people are talking about, oh, the Knicks are going to win 50 games. Like, that's closer to a 60-win team than a 50-win team.
Right, and I think part of the problem with, well, not problem, but I think part of the reason he's underrated is that, you know, unfortunately for him, he wound up coming in right around the Jeremy Lin, you know.
Yeah.
Literally, it was a fluke. Not to take anything away from Lin, but the way that team performed.
It was.
So I think that people forget that that team was D'Antoni's for half a season.
Yeah.
And that the poor half of the season was D'Antoni's.
Yeah.
And, you know, Mike Woodson came right off the bat and turned it around. It was fantastic.
Yeah, and he's really kept it up. I think he really is in touch with all the players. I think he's corralled the two guys who you need to corral, which is Melo and J.R. Smith. Has yet to be seen what to do with Amari. And I do think Amari is a great mid-range shooter, and that's really his biggest skill set right now. I don't think he has the athleticism. He doesn't really have much of a post-up game. He's a great pick-and-roll guy, but Chandler's our pick-and-roll guy when Felton's in there. So I still don't know how, you know, maybe we play him on the opposite side somehow and he cuts. I really just don't see I'm trying to visualize a scenario where Melo has the ball in ISO on one side, or they're running pick and roll with Felton and Chandler and Amari and Melo's on the other side. Where is Amari? Is he in the corner standing at the 3-point line like Gasol is for the Lakers, which it doesn't work? You know, I think it's a similar situation where you have a guy whose skill set doesn't match you have three players that are already, we already have two sides of the court worked. It's either Felton Chandler or Melo and ISO. That's sort of our two sides of the court. I just don't know where Amari fits in the court.
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question. And, like, it's almost one of those things where, like, I'm trying to sort of replay the tape in the Phoenix Suns days when they were winning, you know, a ton of playoff series. I mean, he definitely had, what was really interesting about him was, I feel like he sort of developed that really, really, really accurate 18-footer that he's always gotten from that one particular spot right outside the paint. And, you know, when obviously Nash was not too bad at running a pick and roll himself in Phoenix, and I think that, you know, a lot of that had to do with just the, like you said, the way there is a place for everyone. I mean, you didn't just have Amari, you had Sean Marion, and you had all these, and you had at very different times of you had Amari, Marion, you had DR, you had Barbosa, and all these guys kind of running in the running gun. And Amari would kind of find that shot when he did, but he also had to play a lot of that inside paint stuff that Tyson Chandler does. It's almost like you want him to be almost a corner guy, but maybe not in the corner itself.
Yeah.
Kind of meandering around.
I don't know. I really don't know. Look, I think he'll get his points, you know, with the second unit mostly. I'm just a little worried that we're sort of forgetting that at the end of the game, he's going to want to be in there. He's going to demand to be in there. I don't think he'll quietly sit on the bench waving a towel in the fourth quarter of a close game and say, I'm Amari Stoudemire. I don't belong in the game in the closing minutes.
Yeah, I mean, that could, you know, that will be an issue. I think that, you know, one of the things too that's funny is that, and this is a thing I sort of have like a unofficial list of players who are, has another list of guys who, what they do is they make one or two really flashy plays in a game that the team that they're on is dominated, not necessarily despite them often, and they're the one who's just screeching and screaming and raising the roof, but they're really just trying to get themselves involved in sort of the stellar performance that their teammates are.
You mean the guy who beats his chest and like coming up?
Yeah, exactly. The guy who finds a ball and dunks it and then just starts screaming on a timeout when really he's like one for eight.
So Amari's on that list also?
Well, he's one of those guys who I've seen do that from time to time. Yeah. And so what that translates to in my eyes is what you're saying, you know, has some accuracy in that he's going to want to be involved in the good times. And, you know, listen, at the end of the day, you know, I actually was one of the few, as much as I like to laugh at him, right, who felt bad for him after last year's playoff exit. When you punch a fire extinguisher, I was honestly, all joking aside, really surprised he even had that fire in him. I didn't think he really cared that much about the game. But apparently he does. So
part of me goes the opposite. Part of me thinks it was like a deliberate attempt to show how much he cared while also not having to play in the loss. I mean, who knows what's going on in Amari's head. Look, I want to give him the benefit of the doubt because I want to like him. I want to like the team, everybody. I want everybody on the team to succeed.
Right.
You know, I want it to be one big happy family. Things are going great right now, but there's chinks in the armor. We've now seen that we have, you know, stretches where we struggle to create, and I think he'll help with that. So I'm looking forward to him coming back. Now, I'd like to transition to we make our predictions for the week. You guys don't know this. Mike is a very avid and very successful NBA gambler. I don't want to say – do I want to say what your record is this year so far in games? Do you have a
– you don't have an official record that somebody – it is a winning record, and it is on in a log somewhere, but I just don't know it
all. Are you over 60%?
I believe so, yeah.
Are you over 70%?
This is spread. That, no, probably not over 70.
All right, so he's high 60. So if anybody out there is gambling, you know, I don't advise that you should gamble. Okay,
you know, I may be, though. I may be over 70. I have to really take a look
at
the numbers.
But he's generally acknowledged as a good gambler. One year we lived together like 12 years ago, and we paid the rent by picking just one NFL game a week, and we bet $100, and we doubled it down every week for, I think it was like 7 or 8 weeks.
Yeah, that was some business model we had
there. That was the double down. That was, you know, like the casino theory. Like, oh, you'll never lose if you keep doubling down.
You just can't. You just have to bankroll until you win. Yeah.
Until you win, yeah. So we had that good run. He's having a really good run. I think you have a podcast about gambling. Is that right?
I do. We have it. Thanks. We do. It's on GumboSportsNation.com. Gumbo, like
Like gumbo, like the crappy, mushy food
right
in New Orleans.
Exactly.
The overrated, like the most overrated diarrhea-inducing food.
Yeah.
Maybe you like gumbo, but look, we're Jews. We're Jews who literally, both of us in our pockets are carrying Imodium right now because that's how our stomachs are. So gumbo is not our thing.
Needless to say, I didn't name it. But yeah, we do. It's GumboSportsNation.com/AU because it's an Australian site.
So the Aussies, I found, are really into the NBA. What explains that?
Well, what it is their gambling culture lends itself well.
Oh, because they're a bunch of degenerates. Okay.
That's pretty much what's going on. Any smart, savvy Aussie would do, they called me from across the world, So let's get this guy involved in a little thing.
So let me ask you this, but why basket? I mean, the gambling on basketball is easier, they find, or they're just like, is it the game themselves or it's the gambling?
Oh, I didn't know that. What, are they particular towards the NBA?
Yeah, I've noticed a lot of Australians love the NBA.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't know that. I know we do NFL and NBA on the site. And so, you know, I just happen to be more of the NBA guy than the NFL guy, just in terms of my knowledge. But yeah, I don't know. I'll find out from the guys.
What explains their NBA fanaticism? All right, so let's get into some picks then. So first we're going to go with the Knicks. So we have three games on the schedule this week. I mean, we're just talking straight up, but we can look at the spread if you want as well. Only for the next game is tomorrow, Christmas Day. Nash is back with the Lakers. The Knicks are going to be in LA. You know, if I had the money, I would go to the game, but I don't, unless you want to take me to the game on your dime.
Yeah, let's take a look at how good of a week we had. Maybe we could go to the game, but
yeah. You know, although Mike did just purchase a nice new car. He's got the Chrysler 300, so I don't know if he's got any Laker money left.
Well, we could go to the game in style, but we're gonna have to listen to rate with the radio outside.
Yeah, we're gonna drive. We're gonna drive to the game in his new car, and then we're just gonna listen to it on the radio. It's sort of like we used to grow up on Long Island. If there's any Long Island listeners, it's sort of like, if you wanted to go to a Jones Beach concert and you just didn't want to pay the money, you could literally just park in the parking lot and sit there and listen to everything all the suckers in the arena were listening to.
All those guys who want to see the band.
Yeah, like, I want to see the band. I mean, that's chick stuff.
Yeah.
I just want to hear John Mayer's soothing sounds. All right, so we got the Lakers. ABC, Nash and Kobe. You know, Melo and not Amare. He's not back, but Melo and company. Make a prediction here.
Oh, you see, this is such a tough game to predict. You know what? I think that this game is going to play out well for the Lakers, because I think that the Laker crowd will be so involved. So they will get a home field edge based on that, based on the return of Nash and coming off of that dramatic overtime.
He looked
victory.
Really good, didn't he?
He looked very good. And you know, he.
Except for his hair. His hair looked horrendous.
I love that floppy hair. Even that defies gravity, yeah.
Reminds me of every Supercuts haircut I've had in my life.
Yeah, it's a very, like, you know, like a very particularly, like, 1980s era Canadian haircut, I believe. I don't know exactly any other way to describe it.
So it's retro Canadian.
In a way that I don't even know. It's like you said, it's a certain cutting method that.
Yeah. It's like every time you go into a really bad hair salon and there's a girl who has the Steve Nash cut, and for some reason you end up having her cut your hair, and you have nothing to talk about with her because she's from Seattle, and I don't know, you're not from Seattle, and that's really all you would have in common with the person who cuts your hair at a really crappy haircutting place. But so he's basically a female haircutter from Seattle right now, but he's running the show really well. He got everybody involved more than they had been with Kobe just jacking up. Although Kobe jacked up a lot of shots again.
Hey, it was 16-41. I mean, let's not forget. And what's funny most about that is when you see the highlights of that game, you would not know that at all. It looked like Kobe played like a flu game. I mean, it was unbelievable how little of his poor stuff they showed, because he picked it up in the fourth quarter, granted, and he was the one who stepped up.
I was
up.
Surprised by how many shots he took. I thought, you know, Nash running the show, that sort of the idea would be that Nash wouldn't allow him to go over his quota of shots.
Well, you know what? That's why that game really fascinated me. I actually watched it a couple of times just to see some really. You can see some really interesting things about how they're kind of feeling each other out on the court with Nash and Howard, Nash and Gasol, Nash and Kobe, and how they were working together. And I think Nash in this way, from what I got, even with that ISO play they ran at the end of regulation that brought it to overtime. You know, drawing Kobe into a double team in the corner, taking a contested shot, Nash at the top of the key open for the three. Don't give the ball back to him. And same as always, he takes that shot, misses, it goes over, and they wind up winning. But what I saw in Nash was a guy who was sort of feeling out. Like, he was almost like the lean on me's. Let me go see what's going on this school, and then I'll fix it. And like, okay, that's kind of the vibe I got about what
he's
doing. So
he's Crazy Joe Clark. Get those chains off the doors!
That's what he's saying. Get the chains off the doors. Kobe, get the hell out of that triple team.
We don't want a good principal. We want Mr. Clark!
Gasol, the ball's going to be coming at your fingertips a little quicker and faster than you used to.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not Chris Duhon. But,
I think the biggest thing is that Steve Nash is the best shooter in the NBA. That's probably the biggest help to the Lakers.
Well, yeah, but the thing is, and a couple of interesting factors are that, you know, he shoots a lot less than he used.
I know. I don't know why. I've never understood why a guy who's clearly the best shooter in the NBA shoots so little.
It is an interesting thing. Partly because I think most of his success came from getting other people involved to the point that even when the team degenerated to the point where they weren't a playoff team in Phoenix, I'm talking about, he sort of still, that's what he does.
But every time every team has tried to go with the method of, like, let's just not let Steve Nash beat us with the pass, let him beat us with a shot, he goes off for 40 on, like, you know, 70%
right.
shooting.
Right. Well, and that's the other factor that's interesting that you don't hear too much about. One of the things that Nash in his two MVP years and the real peak of his prime was amazing, was you didn't know if he was going to pass, shoot, or drive.
Right.
And he could drive like the best of them.
Yeah.
But he can't do that anymore.
No,
he can drive
he
a little bit.
Anymore.
Well, he can do a little dribble drive and you know.
He just can't finish the way he used
exactly.
to.
Exactly. He won't make those acrobatic things. And he'll do it maybe two, 3 times a game at most, but he won't. It's not an equal threat to the other two anymore. But that's okay because they have, you know, more talent around them. They have Dwight Howard.
Let's be honest here, though. Lakers are not winning the championship this year. I'm going on record as saying there's a 0% chance. What do you agree or disagree?
I disagree with the number zero, but I very strongly agree that they're not going to win the championship.
But you won't go zero.
I'm going zero
because they're playing serious minutes. Darius Morris, Ron Artest, Jody Meeks. I mean, they just don't have enough
guys. They're not going to win a championship.
Antoine James. They just don't have enough. I mean, you look at the Knicks, right? The reason I think the Knicks might win a championship, I'm not saying they would, but they have 9 good players. I mean, you know, there's like 9 or 10 good players. You know, like Oklahoma City has a lot of good bench players. Memphis has a tremendously deep team. Miami has now, you know, other pieces. They added a couple bench pieces. Like, you need that, especially in the playoffs. The Lakers have nobody they can count on off the bench to win a game for them. There's nobody on that bench who, in the playoffs, a bench player has to step up at some point for you to win the championship. A guy you didn't expect, they just don't. That doesn't exist unless they make a trade. That just doesn't exist.
You can even go through the years. You had Shane Battier, you had Jason Terry, you had Meta World Peace or Ron Artest.
Right.
There's always that guy.
Right. Who wins a game. Who wins
a
game.
Berea.
Yeah. Berea. I mean, you can go back all through the years. Ori, Paxson, Kerr. You just need an unexpected boost from a sixth man off the bench to win a game. The Lakers do not have that. Fans are deluding themselves if they think they can actually win a championship without that. Now, granted, if they get that in a trade, then we're in a different situation.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're definitely one Laker-esque trade away from...
Oh, yeah. And they always somehow they always
Jerry
seem to have buddies.
West, puppet
string. Somehow they always seem to have a buddy in some second-rate team. Like, Toronto will probably just give them Bargnani or something. And Calderon for Gasol. No, they'll probably end up trading Gasol for Calderon and Bargnani, which will be a huge boost to the Lakers. Because Bargnani gives you, like, 75% of what Gasol does, and Calderon will give you everything you need for when Nash is resting.
It's funny you say that because on my brand new 2012 cancer list going into 2013,
is Bargnani?
Bargnani is a big fat number one. He was before he left
with
the injury, by the way.
He is, but he's a big man who can stretch the floor like Gasol.
Yes.
I was thinking Calderon was the more important piece in that.
I just don't think he cares to anymore. I think Bargnani's new thing is let me just throw the ball.
But I happen to think Calderon's a tremendous player.
He's fantastic.
So I happen to think that, like, if that was the trade presented to the Lakers, they should do it in a heartbeat because that's the more important factor.
I would agree. Especially with Gasol, just the treatment he's getting there.
Oh,
I wouldn't want to.
Poor guy. Why does he get crapped on so much?
I don't know. It's got to be a Spanish thing. I have no idea.
But Marc Gasol's too tough. It doesn't seem like anyone would mess with Marc Gasol.
Yeah, well, Marc Gasol's got the beard. He doesn't look like a heroin act. You know, there's a few things going on that, Pau Gasol just looks
Let's get back to the Knicks.
He's going to borrow a spoon from you or something.
Yeah, he does look like a guy, and you'd say, no, I'm not lending you a spoon.
Yeah,
let's the next week is Lakers Tuesday. I'm calling that a win for the Knicks.
So you're calling that a road win for the Knicks going into the Lakers. I'm going to say the Lakers are going to win another one, and it's going to be... I think it's going to be something along the lines of an 8-point Laker win in this one. I feel it's their time. They just have this kind of momentum. They're going to play a little bit better than they are.
I think they've played scrub teams. They're playing the Knicks.
Yeah, I don't feel good about that pick at all. I don't feel good about picking that game at all, I should say. So, for the record, I'm off of it as a handicapper.
Right.
But as a guy telling you what I think is going to happen, it's the Lakers.
I think it's more of, again, Melo on the big stage trying to show everybody something. And he did that against the Lakers last time. If Howard didn't, you know, absolutely body check him, he probably would have gone for 50. And his ankle has actually been bothering him still. I don't even still think he's fully healthy. So hopefully tomorrow we'll have a big game. And then back-to-back, the Knicks then go to Phoenix. I think that's a dangerous game for the Knicks. I think, you know, they're going to put all their energy into this Laker game. Well, depending on the outcome of Lakers, I think if they beat the Lakers, they might lose to Phoenix. If they lose to Lakers, there's zero chance they come out flat against a Phoenix Suns team.
Yeah, you know, Phoenix, they just got beaten the heck out of by the Clippers. And so, like, I mean, the problem with that with them is, though, are they the kind of team that's even going to get angry or even have the ability to get angry and let that work in their advantage?
Like, I don't think so.
I don't either. They're just not talented at all.
Yeah, they're not a talented team.
But you know what? It's a dangerous game in the sense that the Phoenix home crowd is fantastic.
The Knicks will be on an emotional letdown after the Lakers.
You got two teams that are pretty much shooters. You know, for the most part, they all live and die by either three ball or, you know, and Dragic, if he gets into some sort of a one.
He could give Felton a little trouble.
Yes, exactly. He's kind of wily.
All right, so make your prediction.
So now we're going into, I'm not used to this, picking games. Games after other games, but
we go the whole week for the Knicks. We make our week predictions.
Yeah, okay. I'm gonna go with the Knicks. This is again off the top of my head without seeing any injuries. I'm gonna go with the Knicks blowout in that one. I'm gonna say Knicks by 18.
Okay, and then on Friday, I like that. I think the Knicks will win probably either way, but Friday we end the week with a somewhat relatively easy road trip for the Knicks. I mean, it's a 3-game trip and it ends in Sacramento against a really dysfunctional team. I mean, I think the Knicks should handle Sacramento without a problem.
Well, the thing is, Sacramento, I mean, they're kind of a tough home team, too, sometimes.
Yeah, well, they don't win anything on the road, and then at home, they, you know.
You're right. The thing about them,
they're a young, dysfunctional team. That's what young, dysfunctional teams do. You know, they play okay at home, and on the road, they just go out and go to strip clubs and, you know, whatever. Boogie Cousins and... Yeah, and company.
Yeah, well, and I hate
Sacramento.
Is he playing by then? Or is
he got suspended for something, right? What did he do?
He got in a fight with his coach.
Fist fight?
No, it was a verbal altercation and the coach benched him the entire second half of the game.
Who is the coach for the Kings? I don't even know.
That's a good question.
I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, is it? Yeah, it's not Jacques Vaughn.
No, he's Orlando. Well, anyway, so he's suspended.
Yeah, it's a guy who got angry.
Yeah. I also don't like the Kings because they have somebody named Isaiah Thomas. Even though I know he's not related to the plague, the pariah Isaiah, just I don't like the name.
I wonder how you must feel. I mean, I was upset about it. I wonder how you must feel about Isaiah joining the NBA.
I was hoping nobody would ask me about that because unfortunately, he was good. I have to give him a little bit of credit. He's actually really insightful, but I hate him. I hate his high voice. His girly high voice. And the Knicks were getting blown out, so it was a really tough pill to swallow watching Isaiah.
Oh, okay. See, I haven't even really heard him speak at all. I just saw that he had joined
the family. He's actually really good. I mean, the guy knows the game of basketball,
obviously. Yeah.
And he's very well spoken, too. You know, he really knows the ins and outs.
He's dependent on his charm long enough.
He's charming,
underneath all
right, exactly. He's a charming snake, you know? That's the thing. He was charming me, you know? I was like, oh, man, this guy's captivating. And then I'm like, no, that's Isaiah. He ruined you. He ruined your decade. No. So, you know, look, I'm gonna give him a fair chance, but I still hate him. I'm never going to not hate him.
No, I don't blame you.
But I love NBA TV, so I have to watch. And I think I told you, Cousin Mike, that I'm going to do a rankings of the NBA analysts at some point.
I look forward to seeing that, yeah.
Yeah. So you think then Sacramento might give the Knicks trouble this week?
Well, here's the thing. So we got DeMarcus Cousins. I'm not clear on this. I think he was only suspended for one game, right?
Yeah.
But the thing is, it's coming right off of Tyreke Evans coming back from injury, and I really was excited to see what they would do with him back. And now all of a sudden, DeMarcus can't behave himself. And, you know, it's dysfunctional is the perfect word for that team. I think the Knicks really lucked out. They got a 3-game road trip where they could win all three. I'm going to give the first one to the Lakers, but I think they'll beat the Kings too.
Okay.
Right now it's, the the guys that are on the team, I mean, was DeMarcus Cousins, he's already fired his agent, he got in a huge fight with his coach. This is his third suspension of this season already. Three separate incidents.
Did you see the 30 for 30 about the athletes who squandered away all their money?
Oh, yeah, sure.
I'm pretty sure if there's a sequel, he's already primed to be the star of that.
I wouldn't be shocked to see him, yeah, he's definitely got something, you know, and it's just one of those things where I'll never understand.
Loads of talent,
loads of, you know, all upside, young. I just don't understand, you know where, obviously I don't know the guy, I don't know anything about his life, so I don't even really want to sit here and go that far, but I just don't see how you can't just, you know, rein in your temper. Just get it together. Just be a professional for all the money.
Too much money, man. Too much handed to him. Too much is handed to him. He doesn't have to. All right? He doesn't have to.
Well, he's going to have to if he's been suspended three different times.
Yeah, he'll be out of the league if he keeps down this road. I think the Knicks are going to go 3-0, but I wouldn't be shocked if they lose to either LA or Phoenix. I'll be shocked if they end the year by losing to Sacramento. It'll be nice.
The trip.
I mean, that's the end of the year too.
Right.
They could close out the year potentially 23-7, which would just be an absurd record. But at the same time, even if they lost 2 out of 3, they would close the year at 21-9, which is astonishing. Well beyond what anyone would have predicted by this point in the year for the Knicks. I mean, you're talking about a high 50-win team. Let's talk about just elsewhere around the league. Is there a surprise team for you right now?
In terms of overall, well, there's surprise players, and there's like we were talking earlier about Andre Kirilenko. I feel like he's turned it up to
Minnesota, man. I was watching, you know, we should mention that the Knicks barely escaped Minnesota yesterday. They're a good team. I mean, Love wasn't playing. You know, obviously Melo had an amazing closeout to the fourth quarter. J.R. Smith has just been playing lights out. He's actually shooting well now, which he wasn't earlier in the year. Which is a dangerous thing for JR. You know, when he's shooting well, that means he wants more shots. And how many shots do we want to give JR Smith? I don't think we want to put him up in the 15 to 20 shots a game mode. So it's a blessing and a curse. But he's, you know, he played the lights out. But Minnesota showed me a lot. First of all, that guy Pekovic, the guy from, you know, Superman 2, one of the bad guys, he's probably the strongest guy in the NBA.
He's not very graceful, but he's definitely really strong. And
would you say he's the strongest guy in the NBA since Anthony Mason?
You know, I don't know. He's definitely. We all assume. What if Anthony Mason was just a total marshmallow weakling? He just looks so.
Yeah,
badass.
I don't know. Yeah, he was so big.
We all were just so scared. I mean, anybody, guys you haven't met.
Oakley was the real tough guy of that team. Anyway.
Yeah, definitely. Now we're talking about an era where you were allowed to body.
Right, you were allowed
around,
to. Yeah, you were allowed to punch people and not like get suspended.
Just part of the game.
Yeah. I'm just saying, this guy, his body is just like a world's strongest man body. It's not an NBA body.
Yeah, no, he's an intimidating presence. That way, you know, I think Kevin Love gets such good opportunities. You know, when he's healthy. But that team they're really exciting. You know, they picked up Delfino, so they're just surrounding the perimeter with shooters and guys. Actually, not even really that big on the drive. It's pretty much shooters. Ridenauer, Delfino.
Delfino's not on the Timberwolves, is he? I thought he was on. He's on Houston, isn't he?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know. Who do they have on the outside there?
I think you know what. I'm transitioning early because I was going to bring up Houston.
Oh yeah.
Too.
No, Houston has Delfino. They're playing really. He's playing really well.
Yeah, they picked him up, and they're also the shooting team.
Yeah, they're by the way playing really well right now. They're really coming around.
Yeah, they weren't getting the.
No,
wins.
You know who the T-Wolves picked up? Who's coming back? Brandon Roy.
Okay, right. That's right. They did pick up Brandon Roy, which is also a good pickup if he stays healthy.
They've got Chase Buttinger. They've got J.J. Barea.
All these guys have been injured for most of the season, if not all of them. Right.
I mean, they are a team to watch. Maybe not for this year, but in the near future.
Absolutely, right. You know, they are. And, you know, I just like, you know, they did it smart. They did a smart thing. They kind of built the team around what they have and Kevin Love and
Rubio. Yeah, he's
a Rubio. Yeah,
he's incredible. Then they have this backup point guard named Shved, who was incredible last night. This Russian. I don't know where they find these guys. I mean, that guy stole the ball from J.R. Smith, just ripped it out of his hands and popped a three. It almost, you know, won the game for them. They're a team to look out for. I just don't think they're this year's team to...
Oh, no, they're definitely not this year's, but they're definitely...
Neither is Houston, but Houston, again, is another team. I mean, they're, you can really see their hardness for real.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, I was talking...
And you're right, Delfino off the bench for Houston is a big weapon.
It is. He's a shooter, and you know, even though I put him on the wrong team, he's still just as dangerous.
You put him on either one of those teams, he's doing the same thing.
But, yeah, you got, you know... What you got is in Houston, we were talking earlier about James Harden. I feel like, you know, it's sort of underappreciated what he's done this year, just in terms of, like, making that transition
to
a different team, yeah. To a starting, I mean, and to excel at that level.
Yeah, you know, he only scored 30 a game. This is an amazing stat. He only scored 30 a game in a game three times in his Oklahoma career, and now he's done it. I don't know, over 10 times this year, it's pretty incredible.
It's incredible, and I know you have your, you know, you have your issues.
I don't like, I mean, I think he needs to stop running straight. I mean, he just runs straight every time and either draws a foul or gets a charge.
I wants a little more dynamics in his game, which is a valid
point. I would like him to work with Hakeem Olajuwon in the offseason. Isn't that what everybody does when they, like, need some element to their game? It's like, we're going to go send you to work. Does Olajuwon even get paid for that, or does he just do it out of the kindness of his heart?
Who knows? You know, it's funny, though. It was a month or so ago when Barkley called those guys out. I thought that was amazing. Barkley said, you know, I'm tired of all these guys coming into the league, and when they're 27, 28, 29. Yeah, like their ninth 29. Year,
they go, I want to learn how to post-up move. Yeah. By the way, how much do you think it costs for a regular guy? Is there any chance we could go to Olajuwon camp? And just learn some turnaround, like, moves. Like,
yeah, maybe we, or at least until Harden decides he belongs here. Yeah, we should go.
I wonder if that's something, like, you're a rich CEO, like you're, you know, like a Citigroup CEO. Like, I wonder if your wife sends you to Hakeem Olajuwon shake and bake camp. Three days of learning the dream shake.
Do you think that Olajuwon can even teach a guy my size how to play in the post?
Or yeah, probably not.
I mean, would it be like, you know, teaching a guy who's left-handed how to tie a tie?
Yeah, it's probably, you have to be I think you have to be a clunky 7-footer to have Hakeem give you the... I thought Dwight Howard was supposed to have worked with him. That doesn't seem to have materialized.
Yeah, no, I don't know who Dwight Howard's been working with lately, but, you know, he needs to sort of, you know, I don't know. He needs to do something. He definitely needs to work on his free throws, and he definitely needs to. But, you know, unfortunately, Dwight Howard, I just don't think he's 100% yet, and I think he's playing a little bit more hurt than he's letting on. That's just kind of my theory.
What is, we were talking about surprise team. What do you think is the, do you think the Clippers are for real?
I do. I think the Clippers are for real because they have depth that I haven't seen in a long, long time. And
yeah, that guy Bledsoe is incredible, too.
And he was just hanging out on the bench going, hey, you know what, guys, I want to be good, too. And then he just turned into the Eric Bledsoe that we've seen in the last few months.
Yeah, his player efficiency rating, which Hollinger believes in, and I guess I have to. I don't like it because it doesn't rank Melo as the number one player in the league, which I think he's been so far. You know, he doesn't do all the things that LeBron does. LeBron does more things, fine. I get that, but when you watch basketball, nobody's had a better year than Melo. It's just a fact. You know, Durant has had equally as good a year. LeBron has not had...
You know, I heard some stats of LeBron's recently that are absolutely mind-blowing.
Listen, his stats are mind-blowing, but
I'm talking about, you know, with the efficiencies of his passing and his shooting and...
Right, but at the end of the game, right, I get bothered by all that because at the end of the day, it's about winning and losing. Melo... You know, the Knicks have played, you know, Melo wasn't even there for one of the games, and they've beat Miami handily by 20 points. How does that not get factored in this sort of, I mean, it's still early in the season, but that has to play a role in these conversations.
Well, it does, and that's why we have conversations and not just the numbers.
I'm just saying, like the numbers will always suggest that LeBron's the MVP of the league, and maybe rightfully so because he's the best player overall. His body of work is always going to be the best, but... MVP, to me, is a guy that's winning huge games and exceeding expectations, carrying a team on his back. The Knicks have the same record, same record as Miami, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have three superstars. They have one superstar. Doesn't that sort of end the debate?
Somehow you kind of suckered me into an MVP conversation, which is always my least
favorite.
Let's
have a short one because I don't want to go on and on.
Yeah,
about it.
I never like this subject because I think it's such an arbitrary termination. Everyone has a different opinion about it. I think what you're saying is, I think you're making very valid points, and I think that, you know, what you're saying has logic behind it.
Well, the only reason I say it too is because all the conversations where LeBron and Durant are mentioned as MVP candidates and Melo isn't, all they can refer to exclude Melo is this, you know, esoteric PER, you know, analysis.
Right, right. I mean, well, that's if you're going statistically speaking.
Right.
But then again, if we're combining that with the part of the conversation where we have three superstars instead of one,
yeah,
and things like that, those are other external non-stat factors. And to be perfectly fair, even though in name and theory and pay, Bosch and Wade are the other two, you know, in the big three, if you really look at this season, Wade hasn't been playing like a big three guy, whereas J.R. Smith has.
Look, agreed. I mean, I'm sure Wade's numbers are still way better than J.R. Smith.
Well,
you know?
Probably.
and Bosch is averaging 18-8.
Is he really?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Bosch, people act like he's, you know, this slouch potato.
Forget about him.
Yeah, he's like this slouch potato. He's 18-8 in like 29 minutes and like 14 shots a game. The guy's a superstar. And the Knicks have Melo, and then they have a huge drop-off to probably Raymond Felton's the second leading scorer at 14 a game. I mean...
Yeah, no, I mean... Yeah.
And look, Kevin Durant, I mean, let's not pretend that Russell Westbrook isn't a top 10 player in the NBA, because he is.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, with all these things, you know, I guess if you really want to take that view and that perspective and sort of, like, funnel it into, like, you know, purify it into, like, who's the best candidate, what you look at is say, like, okay, what do you think Miami's chances of winning the championship are? Okay, and now injure LeBron for the season tomorrow, and now what do you think they are?
They make the playoffs.
Right, and now...
Do the Knicks make the playoffs without Melo? I don't think so.
Yeah, so there you go. I think without question, Carmelo Anthony's more valuable to the Knicks. Well, not without question, but then LeBron James is to the Heat.
Yeah.
And that sounds kind of weird even finishing that sentence, but it's true. In terms of their
true
value
just
to that franchise.
Right. Right, and that's, you know, that's not necessarily what an MVP... I don't know what an MVP is, you're right. It's a ridiculous term. I just want the conversation to include Melo. That's all I ask for these stupid analysts. Just include Melo. Are you watching the games? I mean, he won another game last night in a game that they were losing the entire game, and then Melo just decided. He just decided in the fourth quarter, we will not lose. And he did it inside and outside. He hit a three, and he backed down Kirilenko, who was playing really good defense, and bullied him into, you know, scoring.
You know, I tweeted something last week because of that. Like, you know, what happens, I always find, is like, you know, there's a lot of Knick haters out there I've discovered from Twitter. And whenever, you know, Melo's having one of those games, a lot of these guys will like to talk. They'll start having these conversations. Is he in the top five? Is he the best shooter in the league? Is he the best player in the league? Are they going to, you know, are they going to underperform in the playoffs? You know, and all these conversations. And I'm, at the end of the day, like, it's okay to change your opinion and to just sit back and enjoy the absolute ridiculous level that Carmelo is
playing.
Right,
I mean, and here's the thing, right? Because it's like, I didn't think he was this good last year. You know,
right.
It's not just Knick haters, right? Like, Knick fans wouldn't have objectively said anything.
No.
That's why I don't think we're being biased, because objectively I would have never in a million years suggested that Melo is an MVP candidate.
No,
you know?
It's a thrill to watch, even if you're not a Knick fan, if you're just a fan of the game, and like... You know, and it's surprising, and it's happening in ways that you wouldn't think, and you know, all of these things are really exciting. Like, now, okay, fine, let's say you have, like, a hatred for the team. If this was happening to the Red Sox and you're a Yankee fan, okay, don't sit back and enjoy it. Hate it even more. But, like, you know, are we really going to get petty? I mean, look at the evidence in front of you. The guy is throwing... It looks like he's throwing it into a kiddie pool.
Yeah.
It doesn't... It's not even... The game is so much less difficult for him than everybody else.
Yeah,
right,
I mean,
now,
by the end of the first quarter, in like 10 games of the series, he already had 20 points.
It's just... There's not even a question that what you're watching is
yeah,
crazy.
I agree with you. I like the idea of, like, let's stop having the conversation and just enjoy what the guy's doing. I think that's probably a good approach for all of us Knicks fans to take. So before we get off, I want to ask you a couple of other predictions. Let's go out west. Do the San Antonio Spurs have what it takes to make the Western Conference Finals?
Always, but they always have they're always dangerous and they always have a chance, I mean to say. I don't think they're going to this year. I think the West is so tough, and, like, it's one of those weird things where I'm going to wedge five teams with a 20% chance. It's really almost
at that point. Well, Oklahoma City's got a much higher than a 20. I mean, Oklahoma City is...
But what do I give them? I give them a 30 to 35% chance.
To
go to the finals.
to go to the NBA Finals.
Yes.
To come out of the West. Okay.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay, okay. But they're definitely going to be in the Western Conference Finals.
I can't see anybody, sure. I would think so.
I think they're the lock to be in the Western Conference Finals. I think the question becomes then, is it Memphis, is it the Lakers, or is it San Antonio, or the Clippers?
Or the Clippers, right. Memphis, San Antonio.
It depends on the matchups, right? I mean, it depends
on
the seeding.
And with a little bit of an X factor. A little, I'm not going to give it a Minnesota, but Houston even has an off chance.
Look, none of those teams are ready this year to make it that far.
Yeah.
You know, any one of those teams, like a Minnesota or Houston, could knock off a Clippers or a Memphis in the first round, and that could be a shock.
Right.
But they won't then also knock off another one. There's no way a Minnesota is going to get through a Clippers and a Memphis.
Right.
Okay. I don't see that happening.
I'll give you that. But then we're also, and this is what's hilarious about the West, is we're not even discussing Golden State,
I got to be honest. I like what they're doing. It's exciting.
No one really believes it.
I don't think you can believe in them, because at the end of the day, their stars are David Lee, who's a workmanlike guy. He's a great hard worker, but he's not end of the game, winning the game for you. You have Steph Curry, who's your one guy, who's your superstar. He's just fragile. He hasn't played a full season.
Right.
He hasn't been healthy for a full season. Then you've got young guys, Klay Thompson, Harrison Barnes. They're not ready to make a real run.
Right. I mean, I agree with that too. But it's just funny.
It's exciting.
A team like that can knock off and win 7-8 games in a row, yeah. And we're still just, they're like 6 on
and
our
it,
power
and again,
in the West, let's say.
Yeah,
you know, it's like,
yeah.
What?
And again, I lump them in with Houston and Minnesota. They make the playoffs. They could upset somebody in the first round, but that's the big season for them. That's the highlight of their season.
Right. I mean, if I'm
I wouldn't want to be. Look, if the Lakers make the playoffs, I wouldn't want to. They would not want to face a young team like Golden State or Houston or Minnesota, because they will run the Lakers out of town.
Yeah, well, that's a good possibility too. Yeah.
Yeah, I just don't believe in the Lakers. I'm going on record as saying the Lakers might eke into the playoffs and be blitzed out in the first round. I just don't like their team. I think Kobe's too old. I think Nash is too old. I think Howard's not healthy. They don't have no bench. I think it's just laughable for Lakers fans to look at that squad and then look at the Clippers and be like, oh yeah, we're as good as they are.
What? You know, to be fair, I think Laker fans are just as panicked as
starting to. They're starting to. But then the Lakers won these 3 games in a row, and now it's, you know, oh, well, we have Nash now. Now we'll be fine.
Well, I wrote a piece called Wait Till Nash Comes Back, and I put it up the day before his game on our site. Because, you know, living in L.A. for so many years, that phrase, you can interchange with other players' names, and that used to give me a huge rise and say, wait till Bynum comes back. Because if you heard this song,
right.
Like, wait till Nash comes back is so surreal on so many levels. Let's wait for the guy
39.
To come back,
who's
39, who has a bad back, who has played for us for 2 games, and by the way, was our mortal enemy for the last 15 years prior to that.
Yeah, but I think that's
without
interesting.
Irony.
I think that's interesting because it's a very tight correlation between the Knicks. You know, we have this wait till Amari comes back and wait till Shumpert comes back. But in a flip sense, we're actually kind of worried that Amari is going to rock the apple cart. It's kind of a funny thing. You know, we're not, I mean, lucky for us, at the beginning of the year, I think we were, let's, you know, wait till Amari comes back to boost the team. But now we're like, oh, we're clicking on all cylinders. Uh-oh, wait till Amari comes back.
Right.
It's kind of a weird, it's kind of a weird thing to, wait till our all-star power forward comes back.
And that's a good problem to have. And that's the problem you want to be on that side of the things, like where all he could do is mess
it up. Right, that's what I'm saying. That's the good wait till that guy comes back, because we're not, you know, expecting that he needs to be the guy. I actually do think Amon Shumpert needs to be a guy that we need back, because our defense, perimeter defense, is embarrassing. People are ripping by us. I think he's a lockdown defender. I don't know. You know, torn ACL, I don't know how guys come back, you know, that are shooting guards with explosiveness. I'm a little worried. What do you think about his chances of being the lockdown guy we need?
Well, you know, I mean, I've always sort of been on the fence about him. Like, sometimes you watch him and he just looks like he's really focused and he's really there. His athleticism, and he's exactly what the Knicks need, you know, to sort of counterbalance all their shooting and you know. But then there's times when, you know, I mean, the guy... It's a torn ACL. I mean, that is nasty and explosive. You never know. You never know. And so, I mean, I think, you know, I think it can only help to have him back. That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to, you know, Stoudemire and Shumpert's return. I want to thank Cousin Mikey for being on the podcast.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
And I want to wish all of the West Coast Knicks fans a happy holidays. You know, I hope you get everything you want for Christmas, especially Knicks just completely annihilating the Lakers because, you know, we're just better than them. I hope we get a healthy Amari and Stat and Rashid and Camby. And, you know, let's hope the Knicks finish this week strong. And let's just keep rolling. It's been a miracle season so far. All the stats would indicate that this is going to be a major run for us in 2013. So that's it for this edition of West Coast Knicks Fan. See you in 2013.